Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo, I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another episode. On today's show, we are going to be discussing pre-free agency Western Conference tiers. I'm going to be ranking the Western Conference 1 through 15 ahead of free agency. This is meant to be a lighthearted exercise, a snapshot. Some teams like Oklahoma City and San Antonio are relatively set in stone, expected to return most of their rotation and key players. And then there are teams like the Los Angeles Lakers, where upwards of half their rotation is expected to enter free agency, and there could be a ton of turnover going into next season. So I want to look at right now, coming out of the playoffs, the 2025-26 season, and the draft. Where are each of these teams with what we currently know about their roster and their situation, and just rank them. And to be clear, before we get into all this, I will be doing a follow-up about a week or so into free agency. Once we have a clearer picture of the West and what moves everyone's made, what trades they've made, and where each team stands, I will follow up with a more in-depth breakdown of all this and go through my logic. I'll have off-season additions and losses. I'll look at their record, net rating, offensive rating, defensive rating from last season, look at their projected starters, projected rotation. For those of you who've been following the show for a bit, I did this last season as well. So I will be doing a more in-depth breakdown of all this post-free agency. Just wanted to have some fun here and talk through where I see the West going into free agency. All right, let's get into it. Tier one is title favorites. Number one, I have Oklahoma City ahead of the San Antonio Spurs as of right now going into next season. I just think they are deeper and more dynamic. They do have a Wemby problem, and they also have a Shea problem in terms of his efficiency and overall effectiveness against San Antonio. But they won 64 games compared to San Antonio 62, despite being far more injured than San Antonio. And so OKC, with their depth, is able to withstand injuries. Where I do have some questions of if San Antonio has a season more like OKC, if they have half of their rotation dealing with some sort of injuries for somewhere between 20 to 40 games, what would that look like? A compromised OKC group took San Antonio to 7. They did not have J-Dub or AJ Mitchell for most of that series. So with those guys healthy, I do think OKC wins that series. They just added Mara. I don't think Chet is capable of playing any worse than he did in the conference finals. And there's an element here of, I still think Shea can continue to improve. Chet and J-Dub can get better, especially if J-Dub's actually healthy and can play 60 plus games next season, be available for the playoffs. You have several guys in the rotation, Kayson Wallace, AJ Mitchell, Jared McCain, who can all improve. And even with them losing a couple guys, Aaron Wiggins and Isaiah Joe, they were not in the top 10 in their rotation in terms of minutes played. And if they end up losing Kenrich Williams as well, he was not in the top 10. So on paper, as of right now, they are returning their top 10 guys. They could potentially lose Lu Dort, although I did think Dort was not as effective in that San Antonio matchup as a Wallace, as a Caruso. Maybe it's a positive in that specific matchup. So going into next season, I would have OKC ahead of San Antonio in the West standings and slightly ahead of them. Now, we'll see what San Antonio does with De'Aaron Fox. We'll see what type of jumps Stephon Castle and Dylan Harper can make next season. We'll see what type of jump Wemby can make next season. Like, if you want to put San Antonio ahead of OKC, I have no issue with that. I think it's close. I think it's frankly more of a 1A, 1B situation, but I'm sticking to rankings here. I'm not copping out with a 1A, 1B. I'm going 1-2, and I'm leaning OKC. I do expect them to be healthier next season. But look, San Antonio has the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. If they go out and get Rui Hachimura or someone to replace Harrison Barnes and it's like an upgrade, that could potentially vault San Antonio ahead of OKC for me. But for right now, it's a heavyweight bout, but I do lean OKC. I think people, especially contextualizing the series, overlook the J-Dub and AJ Mitchell part. I think if those guys are there, and look, San Antonio was dealing with their own stuff. They had a somewhat compromised De'Aaron Fox and Dylan Harper, so we can't overlook that either, but we're splitting hairs here. I think OKC is still the deeper team, more dynamic, more versatile, and they're going to be the better regular season team. And in my opinion, I would pick them over San Antonio next time they play. But a lot can change in the next week as free agency unfolds. Tier two is called Puncher's Chance. This is a group of teams that I think if things break right, could make a conference finals, could beat one of Oklahoma City or San Antonio. I think it's unlikely, and I think it's unlikely that they can beat both. I think maybe they catch a break in one of the matchups, or maybe OKC and San Antonio are on the same side of the bracket, and one of these teams can ascend to the conference finals. But with just how great OKC and San Antonio project to be, also with those teams projected to bring back so much of their core, I think one of the issues with all three of these teams is we have an element of uncertainty in terms of what their rotation is going to look like, what the starting lineup is going to look like, and which key guys are going to be back. And so right now I have the Denver Nuggets at 3, the Minnesota Timberwolves at 4, and the Los Angeles Lakers at 5. Now, let me quickly explain my rationale here. Number one, I think Denver is the closest of the three to running it back and having a similar level of depth to last season. They're probably going to lose one of Cam Johnson or Christian Brown, which will be a blow to them, assuming that they prioritize Peyton Watson. And they have some tough bench decisions with Tim Hardaway Jr., Bruce Brown Jr., and Spencer Jones all hitting free agency. So there is a chance that this group looks a lot different and they do potentially have some blows to the depth. And at that point, I would likely rank them lower. But as of right now, with what we currently know, they still have Jokic, Murray, Gordon, which you look at the regular season data, they were dominant with those guys. They were 20-6 in the 26 games that they played, plus 20 net rating with those guys on the floor together. And so they crushed teams when those guys played. The issue was they only played in 26 games together. That said, with those three plus Watson and then one of Brown or Johnson, I think that's a really strong starting point for your top five players or so. And so for me, Denver's the safest one here. It's the vanilla choice in terms of I know what I'm going to get, where this is a team that's perennially in that 50-win conversation. Jokic is in the MVP conversation. And if Aaron Gordon can recover this summer and go into next season a bit healthier, and maybe they load manage him a little bit or whatever, and have Peyton Watson there to take on some more of Gordon's responsibilities, and he himself can stay healthy, that's where I think Denver, at least entering free agency, is a safer bet, in my opinion, than Minnesota or the Lakers. Now, you could push back and say, hey, they got their butts kicked by Minnesota in round one. I would push back and say they did not have a healthy Aaron Gordon and did not have Peyton Watson. And like, Minnesota and that front line was one of the worst matchups in the league to not have your two most athletic front court players against. So, I mean, it's no surprise, like, when Denver doesn't have Aaron Gordon, they're a completely different team. Then Peyton Watson popped to a certain level, and if they didn't have him, that was another athlete and two-way guy that they didn't have. So I think they were without their third and fourth best player for most of that series, and that's a big reason why they lost. I think if Gordon and Watson are healthy, they win that series, regardless of some of the stuff that played out on the Minnesota side injury-wise. I think a healthy Denver was still better than Minnesota. I know that's not a popular opinion. Some people will disagree. That's fine. That's how I feel about it. Now, I have Minnesota 4 because I like the LaMelo trade. I think they got good value in terms of flipping Naz Reid and not much else. One pick and then some swaps and seconds for LaMelo Ball. And my issue here is that they have completely remade the ethos of their team, and going from this big, tough, nasty group with Randall and Reed and also Dante DiVincenzo, like, that's another part of this, is that DiVincenzo is expected to miss the entire next season. Like, maybe he's able to return very late in the season, but I view it as, okay, you swap Randall for LaMelo, which I will say that's an upgrade. You get the point guard, the ball handler, the lead guy that you want next to Ant to take some of that playmaking burden off of his shoulders, and also to set him up and leverage him off of the ball with his athleticism and his shooting. Love that fit offensively. I think it makes a ton of sense. They could also hide LaMelo Ball defensively. I think that makes a ton of sense. The issue here is it's almost a Randall, Reed, and Dante DiVincenzo trade for LaMelo Ball. And that's where I just look at, okay, so LaMelo, again, upgrade over Randall, but you're losing Reed and Dante DiVincenzo. And I don't think you can just say, oh, well, Ayo Dosunmu is going to replace DiVincenzo. Because, like, yes, he can replace his production to a degree, right? But you had Dante and Ayo before, right? Ayo was more of the Nikhil Alexander Walker replacement. So you can say now, like, all right, Ayo's the Dante replacement, but then you still have that spot in the backcourt that you don't quite have filled. So if you look at their projected starting lineup right now, it's probably Gobert, McDaniels, either Terrence Shannon or Ayo. Ant and LaMelo, depends if they want to go with like their best five or balance it out a little bit more with Terrence Shannon. But that six, like, I like, but you know, Terrence Shannon had some nice moments in the playoffs. I like Johan Berenger. That, you know, he's an interesting prospect, but I'm looking at Minnesota's depth right now, and they basically traded three rotation guys for one. And even if I like LaMelo more than any of those individual guys, it's like, I just think they lost some depth here and they lost their identity, and they're no longer like, they still have McDaniels. They still have Gobert. They still have Ant. They're still going to have some of that energy, that tenacity, and LaMelo will add to that, right? He'll come in with his bravado and like, they're still going to play with an edge. I just don't think it's quite the same. They're not as physically imposing as they once were. And I just really look at the front court and I'm like, the front court's decimated right now. And like, unless Berenger makes a big leap or they get some incredible values in free agency, I'm a bit concerned with that front court right now. McDaniels, I prefer at the three rather than the four. They might have to start him at the four and play him a bit out of position. Like, he can play the four, but I think his superpower is being that three that can guard one through three and guard down and really just envelop ball handlers. So I think they have some real work to do with the roster. They're only going to have the taxpayer MLE, and I'm open to moving them up, especially depending on what happens with Denver and their roster situation. But for now, I like the LaMelo move offensively. I think it puts them in a different class as an offense, but I think they lost some frontline depth. They lost some defense. They lost some toughness and tenacity. And I'm just interested to see how they end up trying to fill out the roster. Now we get to the Lakers, and my original version of this was the Lakers at three, not at five. But the more I thought about it, and just looked at the current roster and all the uncertainty that we have with this group, I felt like I had to put the Lakers at five. So the current roster for the Lakers: Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves. You have Marcus Smart with a player option. I expect him to opt out. DeAndre Ayton with a player option. I expect him to opt in. Jake LaRavia, Jared Vanderbilt, Cameron Carr, Adu Thiro, Bronny James, Dalton Knecht, and Nick Smith Jr., though he has a team option that I expect the Lakers to decline. Like, that's a pretty underwhelming group. I'm taking Marcus off here because I just think he's going to opt out and test free agency. So you have Luka and Austin, which is your strong foundation, plus nine net rating with those guys on the floor this past season, 30-11 record in the 41 games they played together. That's a 60-win pace. And so high floor with Luka and Austin, assuming they both can stay healthy, which obviously has been an issue for the last couple of years. After that, you get to DeAndre Ayton right now is the Lakers' third best player. Then you get to Jake LaRavia and Jared Vanderbilt and a bunch of question marks with their young guys. So I think if you just look at like the core of the Lakers roster right now is Luka and Austin and then DeAndre and Jake and Vando, the core of Denver, at least right now until we get resolution on Peyton Watson's situation, is at least Jokic and Murray and Gordon and Brown and Johnson and potentially Watson. And then you look at Minnesota and they have Ant and LaMelo and McDaniels and Gobert. The Lakers, I love the top two. The issue is when you start comparing like DeAndre Ayton as the third guy to JD McDaniels or Rudy Gobert or DeAndre Ayton to Aaron Gordon or Peyton Watson or whatever, like that's where there's just a pretty sizable gap in my opinion. So until we get real clarity here as to what's happening with LeBron, what's happening with Rui, what's happening with the center position, I have the Lakers a bit lower behind Denver and Minnesota. If the Lakers add Walker Kessler, if they retain LeBron, if they add Peyton Watson and take him from Denver and retain LeBron or whatever, like however the offseason plays out, if the Lakers make some meaningful additions and retain some of their key guys, like that's where I will move the Lakers back up. So could easily put the Lakers at three if you really wanted to, but I'm more so basing it on the current version of the roster. And we can assume, hey, the Lakers are going to go get someone in free agency or trade for someone, or they're going to retain LeBron or whatever. But there's some real uncertainty with that. Like, we don't know if they're going to get Walker Kessler. We don't know if they're going to retain LeBron. We don't know if they're going to retain Rui. Brooklyn and San Antonio are both interested in Rui. San Antonio could offer him potentially a starting job or at least a really important bench role with that non-taxpayer MLE. Brooklyn could pay him cap space. They could pay him above the non-taxpayer MLE and force the Lakers into potentially raising their price to retain Rui. So there's some uncertainty there. And we had the ESPN report a week and a half ago saying Rui might be the odd man out in terms of LA's incumbent free agent. So with the Lakers, there's just so many moving parts here, so much uncertainty that I really like the Luka Austin Foundation. I think it's a strong foundation that as long as you put a competent supporting cast around them, I think they're going to win 50 plus games again for the third straight year. I just think when you look at Minnesota and Denver, they already have more of their core locked in. Whereas with the Lakers, there's just more questions. And until we get those questions resolved, I have the Lakers a little bit behind those teams. But assuming they do resolve those questions and have the offseason that they've been talking about, have the offseason that they've been promising Luka Doncic, the Lakers can rise back up to as high as three. To be clear with this entire tier, none of these teams, in my opinion, can make any moves to get into the first tier with OKC and San Antonio. And so this tier to me is locked in. It's just a matter of what's the order in the tier. So for now, I think Denver has most of their starters, most of their core locked in. They got to probably shed one guy and then figure out their bench. Minnesota has to fill out the starting group, figure that out, also add some frontline depth and just depth in general. And the Lakers have a ton of questions. So I'm going like from most certain to least certain Denver, Minnesota, Lakers. But again, I expect this ranking to be much different post-free agency. Tier three for me is called Almost There, and it's the Houston Rockets in their own tier. To me, the Rockets are not good enough to be in the Denver, Minnesota, LA tier, but they're also not bad enough to be in the next tier. So I have them as this in between. And look, you could argue that they're returning KD, they're returning Amen Thompson, they're returning Alperen Şengün, Jabari Smith, Steven Adams will be coming back, Fred VanVleet will be coming back. Really, the only uncertainty with their rotation right now is Tari Eason. And that, hey, is that team better than this current version of the Lakers? Like, you can make that argument. I'm not going to disagree with you inherently, but I would say that a compromised version of the Lakers beat Houston pretty soundly in round one. And you know, Kevin Durant missed most of that series, but the one game Kevin Durant played in, the Lakers also won and won without Luka and Austin in that one. So I think Houston is a good regular season team. They are a team that can be in that high 40s or even low 50s range. And we'll see if VanVleet and Steven Adams elevate them. Maybe they do elevate them to the next tier. I still don't trust their top end guys as much as I do a Jokic, an Ant, or a Luka. So to me, like KD, especially the last few years, has not been quite to the same level as those guys. Like we're talking about top five guys or in that conversation in Jokic, Ant, and Luka. So I say almost there because I see like a few pathways here for Houston in terms of maybe KD gets back to being that guy and maybe he carries them, right? In you know, come postseason. Or maybe Amen Thompson, Alperen Şengün, Reed Shepard, some of these guys continue to ascend, continue to pop and take a leap next season. Or maybe they, you know, they're now being linked to Marcus Smart. Like maybe they make some trade in season. They have enticing young players. They have picks. Maybe they make a move and go for it in a real way. If Jaylen Brown's available, I think Houston would make a ton of sense for him. If any other star becomes available, Houston has the flexibility to pursue that star and has the assets and young players to, and has the picks and young players to go get them. So Houston to me is a team that probably needs to make a move or needs some unforeseen development from some of the young talent to really be in that next tier with Denver, Minnesota, or the Lakers. I think going into next season, I would pick any of those teams in terms of the standings, but I would also pick any of those teams in terms of a head-to-head matchup. Like we saw, everyone wanted to play the Lakers in round one. Everyone also wanted to play Houston in round one. They played each other and the Lakers won that. So I think Minnesota would have beaten Houston. I think Denver would have beaten Houston, even with the compromised version of Denver. So Houston to me is clearly the fourth best team out of those four. And for now, until we see what the VanVleet or Adams return impact is, or we see some of the young guys take another step, or we see KD go back to being maybe who he was a few years ago. Like that, if we don't see that, I think they're right here in this no man's land where they'll probably be the 5 or 6 seed, but I think they'll almost certainly lose in round one again. I'm going to breeze through tier 4, tier 5, and tier 6. Tier 4 is play-in picture. These are teams that I project not to be in the top 6, but to be in that play-in mix. At 7, I have Portland. 8, I have Phoenix. 9, I have the Clippers. 10, I have the Golden State Warriors. With Portland, I admit I might be a little too low on them. You could maybe argue them on the same tier as Houston, or maybe even above Houston, if you really wanted to, depending on how some of their young guys continue to develop with Denny Avdia, Tamani Kamara, Donovan Klingon, Shaedon Sharpe, Scoot Henderson. They still have Jrue Holiday, Jeremy Grant, the impending return of Damian Lillard. Like, I could be a little bit too low on Portland. So depending on what they do in free agency, they could end up being in maybe that tier three for me. But for now, I have them at the top of this tier and as the closest thing to a threat to the top six. Then Phoenix at eight, they've essentially ran it back with Mark Williams, Colin Gillespie, and Jordan Goodwin. I like this group. I just think there's a relatively low ceiling there of being a mid to maybe at best high 40s win team, but a team that's certainly going to lose in round one to either OKC or San Antonio. Then the Clippers and the Warriors, the old guard here, a lot of questions with both these teams. So I'm giving them an element of respect, an element of reverence with the Clippers. I like the Kawhi Garland tandem a little bit more than the Curry Draymond in just the current iterations. We could debate Steph versus Kawhi. Kawhi was awesome last year, but Garland, I think, started to find his footing in LA. And then you also have guys like Derrick Jones Jr. and Chris Dunn. And like, there's a little bit more of an infrastructure, I think, with the Clippers compared to the Warriors, who, remember, they're going to miss Jimmy Butler and Moses Moody for at least half, if not more, of next season. They're bringing back Al Horford. They're going to try to bring back Kristaps Porzingis. But to me, these are two teams that really need to pick a direction and be aggressive this summer. So the Clippers could be the biggest fallers of all, where if they end up trading Kawhi Leonard or Garland or just going in a different direction, Mathurin's a free agent, they could drop into tier five or tier six for me. But for now, I'm keeping them in this play-in mix. And then, similar thing with Golden State. I don't think they're going to be selling off pieces. They're actually trying to acquire talent, and we'll see what they're able to do. Do they go get LeBron? Do they go get Kawhi? And that could dramatically change how we view Golden State. But right now, it's a pretty compromised version of Golden State. It's Steph. It's Draymond. It's Pods. It's Al Horford. It's maybe Porzingis. It's Gui Santos. Like, it's Yaxel. I like Yaxel, but it's not a great roster. So I think that's a situation where for now I would put them as 10th in the West, but we'll see what ends up happening. And if they make some real improvements, they could easily ascend out of this tier and at least into tier three with the Rockets. Then tier five for me is teams on the rise. I have the Utah Jazz at 11, New Orleans Pelicans at 12, Dallas Mavericks at 13. Some questions for all three of these teams. With Utah, do they retain Walker Kessler and go with what I think would be an awesome young starting five with Kessler, Triple J, Lauri Markkanen, Darren Peterson, and Keontae George, to say nothing of Ace Bailey and some of the guys they'd be having coming off the bench. Like, Utah has been one of these teams that has been in the play-in mix, and they always pull the plug in the second half of the season and try to tank. Like, I think if they go for it this year, I could be too low on them. Like, depending on what happens with the Clippers and the Warriors, Utah, I think, could be ahead of those teams, and maybe they're more in like the Phoenix range. So I'm going to sit with the Utah one. I might be moving them up a little bit, but that's why I had to put them at least at the top of this tier. With New Orleans, you just never know if they're going to be healthy. You never know what's happening in New Orleans. They've also been shopping Trey Murphy and Herb Jones. So if they are resetting and rebuilding again, they're almost rebuilding within the rebuild. If they end up flipping Zion, if they end up flipping Trey Murphy, if they end up flipping Herb Jones, then obviously they're going to take a step back and will probably be in tier six. But for now, I think there's enough talent where if they do want to see what this group can do together, they could be feisty. And a foundation of Trey Murphy, Zion, Herb Jones, Derek Queen, Jeremiah Fears, Eve Misi, like, there is something there. And I don't know what it is, and I don't think the ceiling is that high, but they're a group that I like more than some of the teams behind them. Number 13, Dallas, obviously, like, what does Cooper Flagg do going into year two? Very high expectations coming off of an amazing rookie season. But they just have so many health question marks with Derek Lively, Kyrie Irving, and what's going to happen with Klay Thompson? And are they going to be trading off guys? Are they going to try to trade Daniel Gafford, trade PJ Washington? I think they're a team that I like a lot of the individual pieces and even the fit with some of those pieces together, but this is a team to me that clearly is a lottery level team. I'm giving them a puncher's chance to be like on the rise and maybe as a play-in threat. But for now, I would put them behind Utah and New Orleans, which is all the uncertainty with their health and the direction of the roster. But again, I mean, if New Orleans pulls the plug, obviously Dallas would go ahead of them and New Orleans might drop into this final tier, which is tier six, lottery bound, number 14, Memphis Grizzlies, number 15, Sacramento Kings. You could pick your poison here, which one is 14, which one is 15. Sacramento probably has a little bit more top-end talent with Sabonis, DeRozan, and LaVine, but they also have the worst defensive roster in the NBA or up there for that. So I just don't think this group can defend anybody, and they also can't really shoot or score at a high enough level to offset their defensive limitations. So they, to me, are still the worst team in the NBA. We'll see what happens with Darius Acuff. Like maybe he is a franchise game changer and comes in and makes a real impact. Like I think he eventually will. It's just, can he do that from day one? And then with Memphis, still have Ja, but does feel like they're in this transition period where they're going to flip him. Not much of a trade market right now, but depending on the direction they go, like I like some of the young guys that got Cameron Boozer and Cedric Coward. And I really like Jalen Wells, Zach Edey. I like some of the foundation, but until we know what they have with Boozer and just like how much he can contribute from the jump, this is a group that is pretty limited talent wise and just overall. So right now I have Memphis 14, Sacramento 15, but if Memphis trades Ja and goes in a rebuilding direction, they could easily drop to 15. But you know, it's Sacramento's defense, and just don't love the vibes in Sacramento. Just don't love what's going on there. So for now I'm keeping Sacramento at 15. But that'll do it for today's episode. Remember, we are going to check in about a week or so into free agency, see what moves these teams made, and I expect this to look dramatically different. But appreciate you guys for watching and listening. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back soon. I'll talk to you then.